This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is in no way medical advice. For 24/7 free and confidential support, referral, and treatment options and guidance, please call the National Suicide and Crisis Prevention Hotline at 988. If this is an emergency and you are in an immediate danger to yourself or others, please push pause on this episode and immediately call 911. Hi, I'm Danielle Todd, and you're listening to None of Us Are Normal.
So today we have Cheryl Johnson with us on None of Us Are Normal. You have done so much for the mental health community, especially your own community in Florida. But I wanted to have you kind of explain your foundation and what got you there, Hearts for Minds. And so why don't you just kind of take the floor and let us know?
Sure. I started Hearts for Minds in August of 2018 with my husband and a dear friend. It started on the one-year anniversary of the loss of our son, Alex, who passed away on August 12, 2017 at 22 years old after losing his battle with depression and anxiety. And we knew after losing him that we needed to do something to represent his life. He was a great kid, and we didn't want him to be remembered just by one last bad decision. He actually went out and bought pills on the street in a desperate attempt to feel better. They were laced with fentanyl, and it took his life. For us, it wasn't about concentrating on the purchase of the drugs. It was a little more spending a year digesting what our journey had been like to help him as parents and watching what he went through. And nobody knew how he had passed away. Nobody really asked. And we didn't advertise it, and not because we were embarrassed. It just, we sort of felt protective of his memory. And we realized that that was part of the problem, that people weren't talking about it, that we were unintentionally causing stigma or judgment around it. And so I went to his grave. I tell people this, you can take it for what it is. You know, sometimes the universe talks to us, or sometimes maybe we think it is, and that doesn't matter what the reason is. For me, it was important. I went to visit him on the one-year anniversary of his death, trying to figure out what to do, but wanting to respect the fact that he was private about his story, even though I felt like it needed to be public. And a dragonfly landed on his flowers. We can talk more later about why the dragonfly was a special message, but and it stayed there while I sat journaling and talking to him. And I decided that that was him telling me it was okay for me to take a leap of faith. And off we went. I wrote his story and published it on social media and got unbelievable reactions back, and kind of knew that that was sort of the start of becoming an advocate.
That's amazing. I literally have chills when you're telling this story. First of all, I'm so sorry for the loss of your son, and yeah. I'm sorry that it had to take, you know, something so tragic to create something so beautiful, which is what you have created. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about Hearts for Minds? I just have to say, I went on your website, which we will put in the show notes, but I went on your website, Hearts for Minds, and I spent like a day just going over it because there's so much information on there, but it's also such a beautiful website. You have such a way of explaining where you're coming from, and it's just, it was really beautifully written and really easy to read. So if anybody is looking for information on any of this, definitely check out your website because it's beautiful. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about Hearts for Minds?
Sure. It's been a little bit of an evolution, which is always kind of interesting. I mean, you start out with a concept and then you have to continually fine tune it. I'm sure it's that way with music and songs, right? And we decided primarily what we needed to do was unapologetically talk about it. And that came from a couple of places for us. One was when Alex was a minor and he was diagnosed with depression and anxiety, his dad and I were involved in his care. His doctors communicated with us because he was a minor, And we obviously had to drive him to appointments, and it was very structured and family oriented. When he became an adult, the system started to freeze us out of his care. And even when he was in crisis, we weren't given information about how to help him, signs and symptoms, medication management, all under the guise that he was an adult and he needed to manage it on his own. And we found that super frustrating. And after we lost him, we realized, gosh, it was so different from other hospital experiences we had had. My mom is a 2-time breast cancer survivor. When she was diagnosed, we were invited into her care and told, here's her diagnosis, here's her treatment schedule, here are her doctors, don't ever let her go to an appointment on her own. And she was most definitely an adult. So it was so dynamically adverse to what our experience was with him. So when we set out, we said, okay, we have to unapologetically talk about it, but we have to find ways to change that ecosystem, because nobody can go through a health crisis, mental or physical, without a support system and without advising the support system of how to help, right? Putting tools in people's toolbox. So we started to just do everything based on the premise that no one should lose a loved one simply because they don't have information or don't know where to go. Full stop. We can't save everybody. I'd love to think that. I'd love to be purely idealistic and say, oh, once we get all this out there, we'll save the world. We know we won't. But nobody should lose a loved one simply on those facts alone. And so we have started to develop what we call 4 tenets of what we do. One is the destigmatization, sort of the mental health unapologetic conversation. One is to improve mental health literacy, which is, do I understand what's a feeling and what's a feeling that interferes with my life? Do I understand when I can handle something on my own with a variety of different tools and when I need help, mental health literacy, and all of that to drive early identification. And then we help connect people to resources. And early identification being a super important aspect. And the cancer example is always really easy to explain to people the why. We all inherently know that we want to catch cancer at a stage 1 and not a stage 4. For the fundamental reason that you have a much higher likelihood of a positive treatment outcome. We are dealing with mental health at a crisis level today, globally. That means we're treating it at a stage 4. We have the ability to get in front of it and start treating it at a stage 1 when the likelihood of a long-term positive treatment outcome is higher.
Wow. I've never actually heard that explanation before, being compared to the cancer stages. That is such a great way to explain it, you know, like, oh man, that is just incredible. I love that. So just quickly before we move on, you said so many things there. But I wanted to just stop for a second. If somebody is in an emergency right now or feels unsafe or anything right now while they're listening to this, are they able to go to your website for help or should they go somewhere else for help?
So 2 answers to that question. 1, if it's an emergency and you believe or that someone near you or you are going to harm themselves imminently, call the emergency number. In the US, it's 988. I don't know what the number is in Canada, but if anyone's listening, call the emergency services right away. If you are feeling like you're in a crisis, but not that you're going to harm yourself imminently, you can go to our website, or we can just tell people, you can text the word LIFE, L-I-F-E, to 741-741. And that is a 24/7 crisis text line. And there are trained people standing by that can help de-escalate or help guide somebody who's going through a crisis.
Well, that's wonderful information. Yes. I think you can also dial 911 as well, right?
You can.
Just in case you don't remember, I know everyone knows 911. okay. So thank you for that. Let's go back to what you were saying about how everyone gathers around people who are diagnosed with a physical ailment. Cancer is the one that I think of as well. But when you were talking, I was kind of thinking about my husband is type 1 diabetic. And in order to live with him, I have to know everything about, you know, this illness or this disease, because it's life-saving and life-changing. And it is a life or death situation for him. And so I always knew what type 1 diabetes was because it had been in my family and a few friends had had it. I had actually lost a friend to type 1 diabetes. So I was a little bit like in the know about it when I met him. However, once I started to, you know, date him and live with him, I found out much more about it. And I, when we go to work now, we work downtown. So I tell the bartenders like, hey, if Grady starts acting funny, like you need to give him an orange juice right away. Or if you hear his alarm going off beeping, you need to bring him an orange juice. And so the like everyone around him knows and everyone protects him and helps him. And it's not the same if you were to walk in there with, say, depression or anxiety. I feel like maybe your closest friends will know about it, but they won't speak about it to other people or feel that they are allowed to share that information with other people. So can you kind of expand on that and how you guys are trying to change that?
Absolutely. So one, it is understanding the disease, right? You needed to get educated in order to support Grady and understand as a family, what are healthy diet choices? What are healthy exercise? Recognizing the signs and symptoms that his sugar may be out of whack. And think about any time that anyone has ever educated you on the signs and symptoms of a potential mental health disorder that is disrupting your life. And we are educated on signs and symptoms that we can manage on our own or get help for all the time, right? Our doctors tell us, oh, you might have a cold, you can manage it with over-the-counter drugs. We inherently know the difference between a cold and pneumonia, right? Those are two different things. And so we work to try and provide people with information about the signs and symptoms of mental health disorders and how important it is to get help early. So you can go to the website and find out a lot of information. There's a broad spectrum of mental health disorders, but then we also talk about the family support system as well and making sure that everyone around you, depending on what your medical journey is for your mental health disorder, signs and symptoms of someone not taking their medication properly. What does that look like if you're not taking it at the same time every day? If you've stopped taking it, what happens when someone hasn't slept for a couple of days? What does psychosis look like when you haven't had a lot of sleep? So just arming us with information because all of the other physical health things come so much more naturally to all of us because we start talking about it when we're born, basically, as parents. We're instantly educated on dental care and eye care and how to manage a fever on your own and when to go to the doctor. And we tend not to do that. So we talk about that all the time. And as a family, we started talking about sort of just general feelings because everybody has feelings. And everybody's feelings that they have are also different and can be completely normal, whatever normal is. It's the conversation of when those feelings get so big and overwhelming that they interfere with your life. And I'll tell you a quick funny story about feelings because we have three boys and one girl. And at some point we were watching some reality show. It was just my husband and myself and my daughter. And he was complaining about the fact that this woman on this reality show kept wanting to talk to her potential partners about feelings. He's like, I don't understand. Why is she constantly asking them how they feel and what feelings they have? He's like, maybe I have four feelings in a whole day. Like, I don't get this conversation about feelings. And I think our daughter was about 19 at the time. And she looked at him and she goes, are you kidding? I just had about 10 different feelings in the last 30 seconds when you were talking. So I was like, you know, it can be complicated. And so trying to just give people a little simple guidance, good overview to just get a good sense of what's happening.
That's really interesting that you say that. And it kind of reminds me, I'll tell you a quick story. Hopefully my sister's okay with me telling this. But as if you've heard my previous episodes, my sister is a psychologist and she does have a son and he is almost 4 years old. He's a beautiful boy. And she is so incredible with how she teaches him about feelings. And she writes songs about feelings. And she will say, you know, when he's eating, he'll be done. And he'll say, I'm done. And she'll say, how does your tummy feel? Does it feel full? And I'm like, holy, like I've never, that's just such a new like way for me that I've never, I don't know, maybe I'm just in the dark. I don't have a child, but maybe, I don't know. I don't ask how my dog feels all the time, but maybe it's like a new sort of generation thing where people can start to talk about their feelings as soon as they're born and moving on, like you're saying, like that is, yeah, such an incredible thing. While we're talking about it, you were talking about people who are surrounding loved ones. A lot of times I feel like those people have even less support than the people who are suffering. Can you talk about why loved ones and family members and friends of people who are suffering need support and how they can get it, or what you found helps?
Yeah, absolutely. And you alluded to it a little earlier when you said, you know, when a family member is diagnosed with cancer, you get this outpouring of community support. And one of my friends calls it the casserole effect, right? When a family is in maybe a health crisis, people bring them meals and offer to drive them places and do all those things that naturally help a family relieve some pieces of stress. And, you know, one of the things we hope will eventually change over time is as we normalize the notion of a mental health disorder as an illness, just like any other illness, people will recognize that that puts a stress on the family and start to do those things. But in the meantime, I guess one of my biggest recommendations is ask. Figure out who your closest support system is outside of your nuclear family and just specifically ask. Don't wait for people to offer. And sometimes that can be hard, but I always tell people you have to think of your life in a longer term timeline. And sometimes you're a giver. You are that outside, and sometimes you're a taker. And if you think about your life in terms of balancing those things out over your lifetime, then it's okay to ask for help. And that's a really important thing for someone to recognize. You can't be the one who is providing all the care and not get care for yourself. You will get tired. You will have your own health crisis. And then give yourself permission to take care of yourself. And it is really hard. And we had to figure that out, my husband and I, because if we weren't focused on helping Alex during his crisis and things didn't go right, we would feel guilty. And so you have to sort of let go of that guilt and understand that taking care of yourself is just as important. And that means giving yourself time to have lunch with a friend or put on your headphones and listen to music all by yourself for an hour, whatever that thing is that gives you some relief. Take a walk, go on a hike. You can decide what that looks like. There is no prescribed way to refill your energy, but you have to give yourself permission to do. And then part of that is giving yourself permission to take care of yourself and then asking those around you to help do that.
Yeah, I think also with the conversations around mental health, we were kind of talking about this off air, but the conversations surrounding mental health in this day and age, it's more common to be able to kind of accept it and speak about it. And if you ask somebody for help, I feel like people are like, oh, why didn't I think of that? You know, like, why didn't I think to, you know, maybe drive your son to an appointment or help you with this, you know, because they think that mental health illness is not as burdensome as it is. So asking for help is a huge, huge, huge thing. And even though, like you said, it's hard, I think that people will be more receptive to it than you maybe expect them to be.
Yeah. And you can be super simple and direct. Like I had a friend just say, what do you want me to do for you? And eventually all I said was, you know what? Send me one text message every day that's just a happy, positive, funny, whatever. I don't need you to do anything, but I might need a reminder in the middle of a really bad day. And I probably won't contact you if I'm having a really bad day. So can you just send me something every day? You can ask a friend to do that. It's non-intrusive. I think someone would be so willing to do that. And it is amazing. It's how some of those messages from the heart have started. How much a little positive message randomly can change your whole day.
So I wanted to just read here something that I found on your website that I thought was really, really moving and kind of is in line with what we're talking about right now. You say, watching a loved one suffer from mental illness is one of the most frustrating, angering, and helpless experiences. The fact that it is often done in secret makes the struggle nearly impossible. Although my husband and I did everything we could to provide Alex with support and connect him to medical providers, his care was never consistent, and I made mistakes spending time wanting to shake my son out of it or telling him to buck up and reinforcing negative messages in a desperate attempt to change anything. That was one of the biggest things that stuck out to me on your website, because it feels frustrating to deal with somebody who is perhaps like, say, sad all the time. And you're like, why can't you just be happy? You know, why don't you just smile? And that one really moved me, because it frustrates me when other people say, oh, you know, like, why don't you just get out of bed today? Or, you know, why don't you just do this or not? But if you had a broken leg, they wouldn't say, why don't you just go for a run? It might help it, you know? And so I think that was like a really strong thing to admit and put on your website, that it is frustrating sometimes to be the supporter of somebody who has a mental illness, and to admit that maybe you might make mistakes along the way. But just the fact that you and your husband have come up and made such a big difference and a big change, and you're working towards making those changes, I think that that's really important. So I just wanted to kind of shine a light on that it may be frustrating at times, and it's okay to feel that frustration. Maybe with these steps that you guys are taking with Hearts for Minds, maybe it might be a little bit easier because you'll have those resources and those tools to help you when you feel that frustration. Like, okay, I think maybe saying, why don't you just smile, is not really the best at this moment, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because I feel like lots of people don't have those tools to help. And this is not even, like, we've barely even covered anything about somebody who is actually suffering. It's more so the support around them. So there has to be a big web. It's a big web of different areas and aspects, and you guys have covered a lot of it on your website.
Thank you. I think for me, if I was going to go out there and start to learn everything I could about the ecosystem and start to advocate, I had to be honest about the process and recognize that sometimes when someone is suffering from a mental health disorder, it feels personal to the other people, because we're looking at their life from the outside and saying, my God, you have everything going for you. You're this handsome, charming, super intelligent, great outdoorsman. I mean, this is me looking at my son. And to be honest, that's not the way he looked at himself. So the fact that he was so debilitated by this illness, and I just couldn't get it. Like, I just don't understand why, because you're so incredible. Surrendering to the notion that I would never ask him to will away cancer. Like, we would never ask him to do that, because that would never happen. Sort of asking someone who's going through it to will it away is misplaced. And my having to go through that journey and letting people know that I've been there, that's great. I may seem like I have it together today, but we were a mess back then. And I was just flailing around trying to figure out what to do and just didn't have it. And I wish I would have had a me back then. And that's a lot of what drives me to continue to talk about it. So yeah, getting a little raw with, I used to get super frustrated. Didn't mean we didn't love him or supported him, but we got frustrated. And by the way, we're all human. That's okay too. Give yourself grace and permission to be sad and frustrated.
Yeah, absolutely. I really just loved that part. It really stuck out to me on your website, because yeah, I do think that it isn't just about the person who's suffering. It's about all the people around them too. And I also would like to say that I feel like because of that, that is also a reason why people who are suffering isolate, because they don't want to bring down the people around them.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important to say that the people who love them and care for them would rather be brought down for a minute than lose them, you know? And that's, at the end of the day, I think that that's a big thing that sometimes people who are suffering can forget, that like these people love you for a reason, you know, and there's big reason for that. So trust that love, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And tell the person that you love all of those things. There are a variety of different trainings out there that people can go through to help with suicide prevention and mental health first aid training. And some of the things they talk about is, you know, what stops some people from having suicidal ideations and then committing suicide? And they sort of talk about it in terms of a brick wall, all of the things that create a brick wall between thinking about it and ultimately completing the act. And it's complicated. There are a lot of things that go into it, but having loved ones who express their love to you, who say, I want you to stay no matter what, that is one of the bricks in the brick wall that people can help that person build, creating an entire structure, right, that keeps them. They may have those thoughts, but create a structure, open communication, a support system, reinforcement that they're valued and that you want them to stay and that you're there for them. Those are all the brick wall to keep them from completing the act.
I love all of your analogies. They are so like educational and so easy to understand. So I just like, oh, that's wonderful. I'm going to like use them.
You should totally take them. It's like, I am not a clinician, right? So I don't think that way. And I just try and think about, someone's trying to teach me all these things. Please don't use medical terms, because I don't know that I completely understand them. Like, I just need basic concepts. Just
yes. Yes. Break it down. Okay. So let's take a jump back. You kind of mentioned messages with heart. I read that on your website as well. I love this idea. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
So I don't even know how it started. I just started writing these notes on Post-it notes and sticking them around random places, and eventually decided to get branded Post-it notes. And so we just fill them out with whatever positive message we can think of. I stick them everywhere. My husband is convinced one day I'm going to get arrested because I put them in airports and every public place I can go. And I've decided they're Post-it notes. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing anybody can do. They can't take down. I mean, we're not vandalizing anything, but theoretically, I've said if I ever got arrested for posting the notes, I just need to have someone there recording so I can scream, I'm just trying to leave positive messages for the world. Be great. Be great for the organization. I think it would totally elevate us in the public eye. One of the greatest ways to feel better about yourself is to help somebody else, and just leaving random notes around. And so we just write weird stuff. I mean, like, make today amazing, or you're already enough, or be brave, or be the reason someone smiles today. Just a bunch of different Post-it notes, and we just stick them everywhere. And people can get Post-it notes that are branded off of our website, and they can leave their own messages all over the place. And I don't know. It just has become one of those things. And we've gotten some really cool messages back from people. A woman who was going through the Dallas-Fort Worth airport and found one. And she sent us a message privately on Instagram and said, I don't know if I was supposed to take it, but I really needed it. And she took it. And it was one that said, I'm already enough. And she said she was having a really bad day and she saw it. She ultimately had it tattooed on her arm, like in my handwriting. And I was like, that's crazy. But it meant something to her. And so she wanted it on her arm. So I think it's just something anybody can do. And to be honest, it makes you feel good. I love leaving notes and then seeing people's faces if I see them, catch them. And it's just spread a little positivity in the world.
That was going to be my next question, is if you had anybody contact you with, because you have your branded website on there, which I think is such a brilliant idea to just leave those around because maybe, like you say, somebody that needs it will find it. So I'm going to get some of those post-it notes and put them all over Nashville for you.
Yeah, everybody should. It's super fun. Now, my husband has bad handwriting, so I write his out. So just a tip for anyone who wants to do it, fill the pad out ahead of time and then.
Oh, that's a good idea. Okay, good tip.
Yeah.
That's so great. So on your website, you have a little section called the Connected Care Program, I believe. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I thought that that was really interesting and I'd like to know like how it works and who it's for.
Yeah. So we talked earlier, I told you one of the things that we were frustrated about is that once Alex was considered an adult, we were frozen out of his care. We weren't even given basic information about how to support him. And we knew that that was inherently wrong because of our experience with my mom. And so both my husband and I are lawyers by trade. So we tend to be a little problem solvey. And we were just banging our heads against the wall saying, great, we can raise awareness, we can educate people, but gosh, we have got to change how we manage mental health care for the family. Like, it's just not working. So we put a PowerPoint presentation together because that's what lawyers do and other business people. But it was like so anti-emotional. She's like, we're going to put a presentation together. And it was Alex's story and on the unfortunate end of his story, not blaming a healthcare system, but explaining where the gaps were. And then we created what is now called the Dragonfly Care Coordinator. And we based it off the notion that it is a role that should support both the patient and the family. And we went to Baptist Healthcare, which is one of the largest healthcare systems here in Jacksonville. And we asked a favor of someone we knew who sat on the board to get us an audience and sat down with them. And I told them our story. And I said, there's a gap in the system, but we have an answer. And they said, yes. And that was in January of 2019. And in March of 2020, they hired the first Dragonfly Care Coordinator at the hospital system. And we raised $1.5 million to fund that role for life. So they will, as long as they're in existence, have a care coordinator. And we are now working to install a second full-time care coordinator at another location here in Northeast Florida. The fundamental notion behind it is that this role wraps both the patient and the family in a system of care that helps them navigate what can often be a complex journey. Whether their therapy is working, connections with the patient, connections with the family, educating the family unit on what that journey looks like, whether they're an inpatient or outpatient, or they need continual care, or whether telehealth is appropriate. But it is a complete educational support system. And the data since we've filled the role since 2020 shows an incredible reduction in attrition and an incredible success rate. So about an increase in 70% positive treatment outcome when the family and the patient have that support.
That is such an incredible like thing to even think of, like somebody to take care of everything as a whole, like oversee the project, basically, you know,
like a general contractor.
Yeah, yes, that's amazing to have that idea. May I ask, do they have some sort of like doctorate or counselor or how do they know?
So they're usually that we look for like a licensed mental health social worker or someone has been in the mental health space so that they don't have to understand the clinical part, but they do have to understand sort of the ecosystem and where to go, be guided by medical professionals, understand the community because they will often help place a patient and their family if needed in alternative therapy options. I'm sure your sister can talk about it. A lot of people don't even know what's available outside of traditional therapists or psychiatrists, that there are peer specialists and family therapy and all different kinds of nuances that can help navigate that long-term system. So they get educated on everything available in the community and help work like a navigator. They navigate the process.
That would be such a huge like burden lifted, because I feel like when people are struggling so much with their own mental health and the family is using all of their resources to support them, it's very hard to, at the end of the day, start researching and, you know, finding those organizations that you might not know about or hear about. So that is such a huge burden kind of lifted by the Dragonfly coordinator. I love that.
I think every hospital that has a behavioral health or a mental health center, whatever they call it, should have a care coordinator.
Yeah, it's yeah. To me, I'm surprised it hasn't been in place before, like long before this. So thank you for creating something like this. And I hope that maybe somebody listening might have connections to make it happen, you know, because that is a really, really huge, huge difference, I think, in somebody's journey.
Yeah. Or they can contact us. We're happy to give them, you know, what we've created to outline what the role is like and talk to them about how you create it. I mean, at the end of the day, for the hospital systems, it's an expense. So I understand why everybody doesn't necessarily do it. It's not a reimbursable expense. It is just pure expense overhead. And, you know, sometimes I struggle with that, right? That's an expense, except, you know, it's the right thing to do. So how do we bridge that gap? So, you know, one step at a time, we go for progress, not perfection. And we are making progress. And the care coordinator model does work. So
that's just phenomenal. I hope somebody catches on and just makes it mandatory, because that's what needs to happen, is somebody who is just saying, okay, this is what we do next. Because a lot of times you're like, you know, somebody who's suffering or family members who are suffering, they say, I don't know what to do. And so if you have some sort of coordinator doing that, like, this is what you do next, I think that's just great. So
yeah,
what an incredible sort of movement and idea. And it's, I can't wait to watch that just grow.
Thank you.
Yes. And okay, so we mentioned Dragonfly coordinator. Are you able to tell us a little bit about the Dragonfly and what it means to you?
Yeah, we buried the lead on that. We didn't really talk about it. So when Alex passed away, we obviously, and people do this every time they lose a loved one, were going through photos of him just to remember who he was as a person. And he was a super sweet kid, big outdoorsman, big into nature, and loved bugs like from the time he was little. And we had this photo of him, and it's on our website. People can go see it. When he was 5, and a dragonfly landed on his nose. And dragonflies are not little bugs. And he was a little boy, and he let this bug land on his face. And we captured this picture, and he has this little smirk on his face. And it was like, oh my God, that's him. Like that's just the spirit of who he was. And so that's how we started to remember him. And it was strange, because after that, we had all these crazy dragonfly interactions and just weird ones, right? And I had said, people can believe that it was a sign, or people may say, oh, you know, it's just a coincidence, whatever. We love it. We had tons of dragonflies outside of our house, like hundreds of them. We have a video of them after he passed away. We've never had that since. Lots of different little things. The dragonfly at his graveside when I decided, okay, we can do this. We're going to be advocates. And so we decided if we were going to do a foundation that had to have a dragonfly on it. The wonderful thing about a dragonfly is spiritually, it's an amazing sign of courage, strength, and change, which I can't think of three better adjectives for somebody going through a mental health journey, right? And a reminder that you have the courage, strength, and ability to change. No matter where you start, you can end up somewhere completely different, right? That's a dragonfly's life. If people don't know, they're born in the water, like they grow in the water and they break through the surface of the water and they fly. You can swim, you can fly. I mean, two completely different places in your life. So it's such a good symbol of change. I always have on this little pin. I don't know if we're going video or not. They're little green dragonfly pins. You can find them on our website. That's our sort of symbol. That's like the safe place. People ask about them all the time. So we've found that it's a great way to start talking to some random stranger about mental health awareness. And people can get a pin on the website too, if you want to. Hey, look, to the world out there, our hope is the little green dragonfly pin will become as recognizable as the pink ribbon is to breast cancer. It's its own symbol. It's a great reminder. And so that's where the dragonfly came from.
That is such a great story. And I do, I love that photo of your son. It's such a beautiful, like angelic, happy moment. So that, and that's so cool. I mean, a dragonfly never landed on my nose. So,
well, I think if it did land on mine, I think it would be a dead dragonfly. I'm not sure. I don't want a big bug on my face, but he was awesome.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Okay, so let's chat about your murals with meaning. I just adore this project. I adore this initiative. I think it is so beautiful what you're doing. So tell us about it and let's chat about it.
Yeah, so one of the things that I know we hear often, and we've kind of threaded it into our conversation, is this notion of, I don't know where to go. Like, I think statistics show if someone knows where to go to get help for their healthcare, regardless of what it is, they will actually go. But if you don't know where to go, you're not going to get help. So we kept trying to figure out, how do we make sure that the members of our community know the resources that are out there? And there are lots of resources out there, including other nonprofits that provide free services or reduced cost services, but people just don't know about them. For a variety of reasons. I thought, gosh, how do you get this message out there? And how do you reach, you know, millions of people across a geographically dispersed, you know, area in the easiest way? So we decided that a mural would be a great way to do it. It enhances the community. It's art, which is incredible. Art is tied to our mental health. In fact, I mean, scientifically, if you walk by a mural while you're walking down the street, they say that your gait slows down, that your mind quiets, you enjoy the color. Like, there are all kinds of things that happen that are tethered to mental health just subtly with a mural. But then we add a QR code to every mural, and people can just click the QR code. It goes right to our website and they can get all the information they want, plus a whole list of resources. And we are always growing that resource list. So we get contacted by organizations throughout the country and we're constantly updating it. And we're working on trying to make the connections to resource national and a really nice interactive platform. But using the art to do that is, I don't know, it just has become this great way. And you can have conversations, right? Art is a great way to storytell. Art is a great way for someone to take their own message away. Every mural, in a completely different way, you can see all the murals on the website, have dragonflies in them somewhere. Sometimes it's subtle. Sometimes it's the main character. We use different artists to help so that their aesthetic is in there. We try and make sure that the location reflects, you know, in the art. But they all have dragonflies so that there is some connection between what we use as our symbol, the message in the community, and then the connections to resources. So we have 9. We have about 4 more in the works, and I have about 3 more appointments in the next week or two to talk to people about some additional sites. And we would love to move them beyond Northeast Florida. So if anyone's listening and you want a mural, you can contact me and we find ways to get grant money or sponsors to put the murals up.
Well, I don't personally have any connections to artists or any murals here, although I know that Nashville has a ton of murals.
They do.
And there's a, you know, there's a big, and Nashville's growing so quickly. So we should, hopefully somebody's listening in Nashville and they're like, oh, I have a wall, you know.
We should totally do that. I know.
Yes. Just reading on your website, there's more subtle connections through mental health and the arts and the murals and connecting people with the QR code. I just think that's a really brilliant idea. You guys have come up with really innovative, interesting and successful ways of reaching people that I feel like nobody else has ever done. So congratulations on such a successful, amazing, changing movement that you've created.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's funny. I've had a rough week this week. I don't know, sometimes I get so stuck in my head about, can we keep doing it? And how do we find ways to keep doing it? And am I making a difference? Am I doing stuff? And a couple of things happened this week that just make me take a step back and go back to why I'm doing this in the first place and just remember what my mission and my purpose is. And just being able to talk to you and reach your listeners and have that connection is just what I needed to just refocus and make sure I, you know, keep my eye on where we're going and one step at a time. It's what I tell everybody else, right? It's consuming your own advice. Just yes. Progress, take one step at a time. You don't have to solve everything at once. So
yeah. And I mean, just your website in general, there's so much information. I'm just gonna say it one more time. It's hearts4minds.com. Is that right?
.org.
Yep. Okay. So hearts4minds.org. We will have that in our show notes. And we'll put anything else in our show notes that you think we should have there just for in terms of, you know, emergencies or anything like that. And we'll also put in the show notes some emergency contacts for anybody who needs help or support at this time.
Perfect. Yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah, beautiful. So I know that when we were off air, we kind of talked about incorporating the arts into your foundation. Did you want to like talk about that a little bit, or what do you think? It's up to you.
Well, I mean, in terms of
just like, okay, so we were talking about
a facility. Yeah.
Yeah, like a facility someday. Oh. I don't know.
Yeah. So, the ultimate dream. Danielle and I are going to do this together because now I'm holding her accountable for the fact that our dreams intersected. Yeah, to ultimately have a community facility and maybe have them everywhere that is a center of excellence for mental wellness. Not just a place that is targeted at the clinical diagnosis of mental health disorders, but also includes all the pieces and parts that people can do for themselves to keep themselves mentally healthy, right? We have gyms all over the place, and we have nutritionists, and we have all those aspects that we say should help us from a physical perspective, but finding, you know, one place where we can go and avail ourselves of all the options that can help us with mental health, which is, you know, arts, visual arts, painting. I mean, there's all kinds of science about art therapy, just simply all those coloring books that are out there. By the way, if someone is out there and you're kind of anxious, but you want just something easy, go get a coloring book. Scientifically, there is a chemical reaction that happens in your brain when you just choose a color to use. So color away. It's good for you. But music therapy and art therapy and mindfulness or a meditation room or a yoga studio, there are a million different things that people can use as tools, breathing techniques, but to have a center of wellness, right? Places where people could get therapy, all of the ancillary pieces, but an honest, you know, not an imposing hospital setting, like a center of wellness that people could go to. So maybe someday. And I always think about it in terms of like it could have different wings if we're going to get literal and then connect the dragonfly to it. Which, I don't know who's out there listening. If you're interested in doing some kind of innovative something, I have lots of ideas.
I know. I have lots of ideas too. I love it. But I think like, just like you said, people go to the gym to take care of their physical health. It'd be so amazing if somebody could just walk in, swipe their card that they, you know, and be like, okay, today I'm going to do yoga, or today I'm going to do botany, or today I'm going to do, you know, journaling or creative writing or whatever, and have those, you know, those resources available in one area. Would just be also like, it sounds amazing. Right. How nice would it be to just be able to go anywhere you want? We should also have a spa in there.
That would be a massage. We'll have massage chairs, right? That's not a bad thing either. Sit in your massage chair or all of those little things.
There's got to be somebody listening that's behind this. Like, I feel like there's going to be very few people that won't be behind supporting that idea.
I agree. We just have to make it happen.
Now it's time for your pick-me-up of the day, a quick piece of advice to help you through hard times.
So I'm Cheryl Johnson from Hearts for Minds, and everybody struggles. One of the things I always tell people is compassion begins when we understand that everybody struggles. And taking care of yourself when you're struggling, whether you're feeling anxious or sad, I do one quick little thing just for myself. I get anxious whenever I go to a speaking event or sometimes when I have some obligation. I just do. I do it all the time, but I still get super anxious. And I have an exercise I do just to help calm my mind. And I call it the 3-3-3-1. You can look it up. There are different varieties of it on the internet. But I will identify three things that I see, three things that I hear. I will move three different body parts. And then when I'm done, I tell myself one positive message for myself. And sometimes you have to do it a few times in a row, but it can help to calm your body, calm your mind, and just get yourself centered and then move on. And I always add the positive reinforcement to yourself because we don't tell ourselves enough positive things about ourselves enough. So I always add that on.
Thank you for listening to None of Us Are Normal. Being a human is hard, and I hope hearing from other humans on my show helps you in your own experience. For additional resources or to learn more about today's guest, please visit DanielleToddMusic.com.
So make it worth every joy, worth every pain. Look for the sun even.